the assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. So, who had their Super Bowl pick for the beginning of the year as the Bengals versus Rams? Cause I don't think a lot of us had that as our prediction at the beginning of the season, but that is what we're getting. Super Bowl 56 is going to be the Bengals versus the Rams. Now, the Rams, I'm not really surprised by because they do have a good team, and they were just in the Super Bowl a few years ago. So that's not really that shocking. But the Bengals, wow. That just basically puts a cherry on top of this season. This season has been one of the best football seasons I've ever watched in my life. I mean, the parity has been great. So many of the games have been great, and we got yet another amazing playoff weekend. I mean, as if last weekend couldn't get any better, we got this weekend where both of the games came down to the very end. And by the way, I am 0-6 with my playoff picks the last couple of weeks too. So I hope you haven't been hitting up Vegas and placing your bets on what I've got to say, because so far I've been pretty bad with the picks during the postseason, which is crazy because if you've listened to me throughout the season, I've been on my friend Simon's show, Sports View with Simon Ruvalcaba, and every Friday we do picks, and I kicked his fucking ass. So during the playoffs, I'm doing shitty, though. But that's because these games are crazy, and this season has been crazy. So the first game we had was the Bengals versus the Chiefs. And the Chiefs came out on fire. They looked like they were just going to absolutely kick the shit out of the Bengals. And then the Bengals in the second quarter ended up getting a touchdown and cutting the lead just a tiny bit. But then right before halftime, the Chiefs had a real nice drive. Looked like they were about to score again, at least get 3 points. And they ended up not scoring any points. Patrick Mahomes had 5 seconds left on the clock. And instead of really getting rid of the ball real quick, he just threw a screen pass to Tyreek Hill, which was really odd. And he got tackled even behind the line, and they went nowhere, and they didn't get any points. And at that point in time, I was kind of like, if the Bengals end up coming back, this is going to be the play that comes back to haunt them. Now, Mahomes did have a couple uncharacteristic interceptions. The Bengals defense really came to play this week, and it was really crazy how the Chiefs, the first half, they did what they did all season long. You know, it's funny that I picked the Chiefs and the 49ers to win this past weekend, and I didn't believe in either of those teams at all season, and they did exactly what I expected them to do. The Chiefs, all season, they'll start out a game real hot, especially in the first quarter or the first drive. They'll drive right down the field, look like the same old Chiefs, and then the second half, they just fall off, and some teams aren't able to keep up with them still, even at that rate, but it costs them in this game. And you really got to give it up to the Bengals, man. They just played their hearts out. And they were really able to get at Mahomes. This defense isn't a crazy defense. I mean, they're basically a no-name defense, and they held it down against one of the best offenses you'll ever see. Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill were basically, they weren't even there the majority of the second half. I mean, in the first half, boom, 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 he was finding everybody. Patrick Mahomes was finding everybody on offense, and then all of a sudden the second half starts, and they go cold, including Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. And Travis Kelce did have a couple good big plays on the last drive for the Chiefs to actually go and tie it up into overtime. And we go into overtime. Chiefs get the coin toss, and everybody's thinking, "Oh shit, Chiefs got this." And no, actually, Patrick Mahomes threw an interception, and Bengals drove right down the field and picked up the field goal. And what's funny about that, too, is what did I say about overtime last week? I told y'all, it's fair. And if your defense comes out and is able to stop the offense, there's no problems. And if you score, then you're all good to go. And that's exactly what the Bengals did. And I mean, real talk, you got to give it up to Joe Burrow, man. That guy, he was getting, I mean, the Chiefs defense was, there were some plays where they literally had him in their arms and he just got out of it. And he made some big plays when he needed to. The defense made some big plays when they needed to. And it's just, I didn't think the Bengals were going to be an awful team this year. I mean, I could see it in Joe Burrow. You could see that he's going to be a good player. And then as the season progressed on, they had some weird losses. But, I mean, when you just hit your stride, if you hit your stride at the right time in the playoffs, it doesn't fucking matter what your record is. It doesn't matter what happened in the regular season. If you win, it don't matter. And the Bengals, they went into Kansas City, you know, the team that's been to the AFC Championship 4 years in a row, the team that's been to the last two Super Bowls, won one of them, lost the last one. But this is the team to beat in the AFC, and the Bengals came right in. They were down. It looked like there was no way this team was going to come back, and they did. And, you know, give it up to the Bengals. Joe Burrow, the entire team's looking great, but Joe Burrow is something else. And it's crazy that the Bengals are in the Super Bowl, and congratulations to them. It's the first time since 1988 they've been back to the Super Bowl. They've never won. So this should be a very interesting matchup, to say the least. But that's just how this season's gone. Crazy games. And then it gets just as crazy in the second game. You got the Rams versus the 49ers. And the Rams ended up winning 20-17. And it was a close matchup. And, I mean, the Niners actually came out real strong. And they were playing great on offense. And it's crazy to watch how well they play Aaron Donald. I mean, Aaron Donald is the best defensive tackle in the league. That guy is a straight-up beast. I also thank him for all of the shirtless pictures he likes to post all the time, because he looks great shirtless, too, by the way, just so y'all know. But he's also a great defensive player, and it's amazing to see that their offensive line was able to keep him in check all the way up until the last play. And all of the moves that the Rams have made really have paid off. I mean, for trading for Matthew Stafford in the offseason, then picking up Von Miller through trade halfway through the season, picking up OBJ after he was released from the Browns in the middle of the season. These are all paying off. And you really got to give it up to Matthew Stafford. Like, for me, it's really exciting to see that this is happening for him, because he spent 13 years in Detroit. He didn't complain about it. He didn't have an issue with it. You never once heard him say a bad thing about Detroit. He still has never said a bad thing about Detroit. I actually believe he enjoyed his time in Detroit. But most people, I think, are shocked at how Matthew Stafford's playing right now, but I'm really not, because I watched him in Detroit. And there were times where he would come down the field and he would bring Detroit back with like 30 seconds on the clock. And it might be their only three games that they win of the season, but still, he played great, and he never had a problem. And usually, if you get drafted by Detroit, you basically stay in Detroit to have your career die, basically. I mean, you take a look at Barry Sanders, one of the greatest running backs of all time, Calvin Johnson, one of the greatest wide receivers of all time. Those two spent their careers there and ended up retiring early because of how bad the Detroit Lions run a team. But Matthew Stafford didn't ever say a word. And when he wanted a trade, you could tell it was a mutual thing. You could tell that the Lions were like, okay, man, we'll let you go. And so to see him come down here to the Rams and finally be able to show the world that, yeah, I'm a good quarterback. He's playing lights out. He did have a couple of bad, you know, the first interception he had in the red zone, I believe it was in the first quarter. It was like their first or second drive. He had that interception. And then he almost threw an interception to end the game before they were able to take the lead. But then Cooper Kupp, man, that guy is just, he just gets better with every game, and nobody can stop him. So that was a very interesting game. You know, the Rams finally got over their 49er hump. They haven't beat them in the last six times. The 49ers actually overall did not play a bad game. I mean, it was just they kind of started to fall apart in the second half. I wouldn't say necessarily fall apart. It's just they weren't able to get any drives going, which was weird, too, because I think going into the fourth quarter, you know, Jimmy G was having a really good game statistics-wise. He wasn't throwing any bad passes. He didn't have nobody had sacked him. He really wasn't under a lot of pressure. You know, Debo Samuel, the dude, nobody could tackle him. He was basically unstoppable for the first half, but they didn't. For some reason, they took him out of the playbook for the second half, and I kind of think that's what cost them in the end. You know, the final interception from Jimmy G at the end of the game, I wouldn't say that's anything to get rid of him. And, I mean, I'm sure 49er fans are sick and tired of seeing him throw interceptions all the time. But, I mean, come on, he was under pressure. It was like 3rd and 15. He had to try and do anything he could to at least try and hopefully get some yards there. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens with him this offseason. I've stated before, I think the 49ers should hold on to him. I don't think they're going to, just because of what they gave up last year to get Trey Lance. You don't pick a quarterback in the first round to sit on the bench for a long time. Also, Jimmy G has had injury issues throughout his entire career. But whoever gets him, they're getting a grown-up because he easily could have thrown a fucking temper tantrum like some quarterbacks in the past have. And I don't blame those quarterbacks, by the way. It's just, I mean, when somebody's coming in to take your job, you can either be a dick or you could be like Jimmy G did. And, you know, you just put your head down, you just play and show what you're worth. And he did get his team to the NFC Championship game. There's going to be a lot of teams looking for quarterbacks this offseason, and I'm sure he's going to get a good look. And wherever he goes, they're getting a solid quarterback, but he's very injury prone, and you're going to need to make sure you have the right weapons around him to make sure that he plays well. But I think he did great this season with the 49ers. He knew that this was the case all season long, and he totally could have crumpled up into a ball and been a whiny little bitch, and he totally wasn't. He came out and played great, great football. The team was behind him, which is the reason why I think it's a mistake to trade him away, because when you have the locker room, that is the most important thing. If your teammates have your back, and they had his back all week, they were going in on Twitter all week, like mad at everybody counting out Jimmy G. And another funny thing that I noticed, and actually I've noticed it the last couple of seasons, which isn't really shocking, but it's funny to watch Los Angeles Rams or Los Angeles Chargers games because the opposing crowd is usually the crowd's usually full of the opposing team. And yesterday, man, there was tons of Niners fans, and that's not the first time. I mean, usually every Rams game has more Niners fans. I noticed when the Cowboys played the Chargers. There was more Cowboys fans there. I'm sure it's the same thing when the Steelers go there or the Packers go there. Those big market teams that have really diehard fan bases, I'm sure their fans outweigh the Rams or the Chargers fans. And I mean, first of all, these two teams just got to LA, so they haven't really built a fan base yet. And especially because, you know, the Rams, they first started in LA, then they moved to St. Louis, then they moved back to LA. So they've been all over the place, and when they left St. Louis, it was not on good terms, and it really pissed off a lot of their fans. So that kind of fucked with their fan base, and it was the same thing with the Chargers too. When they left San Diego, there were tons of fans. There were even like billboards all over the place, if you don't remember, saying, "We are not rooting for the Chargers anymore. Get out of here. We don't want you anymore." So they are still building their fan bases, but one great way to build your fan base is to win and to go to the Super Bowl. And that's definitely something LA is doing this year. The Rams are, at least. I think the Chargers are on their way with Justin Herbert. But, you know, right now, that's next season. But right now, you know, the Rams, they're looking good. And they will be now the second team in a row to play in their home stadium for the Super Bowl. That's never happened before. And also another similarity, too, is the Rams, all they did was change out their quarterback, and we got a new quarterback in here. So Super Bowl 56 is looking to be interesting. And I can't wait to see what happens because this season has been nuts, and we'll see what happens with the last game of the season. Unfortunately, the shitty thing is when the season winds down like this, especially this week, it's the bye week. So what the hell are we all going to do? Watch the Pro Bowl? No fucking thanks. But there was a couple other things that happened in football this weekend. A couple of the coaching positions got filled. Brian Daboll was hired by the New York Giants. He was the Buffalo offensive coordinator. They played really well under him, so we'll see what the Giants got. But welcome to the NFC East, and hopefully Dak Prescott and the Cowboys will be giving Brian Daboll a nice welcome next year. By that, I mean I hope they kick their fucking ass, of course. And then Josh McDaniels was hired by the Las Vegas Raiders, the offensive coordinator of the Patriots, of course. He did have that brief little coaching stint in Denver. I mean, I don't really hold him against him because he did have Tim Tebow as his quarterback, and you couldn't really do much with that loser at quarterback. So we'll see what happens. We'll see if the Raiders end up keeping Derek Carr. They should most certainly keep Derek Carr. I think this kind of solidifies that because Josh McDaniels seems like the type of guy. I mean, he's an offensive coordinator. I would imagine Derek Carr was kind of part of the deal, at least in this one. So two more coaching positions have been filled. And then also some news. It hasn't been official, but apparently Tom Brady's going to retire. I'm not going to eulogize his career yet just because he hasn't said it. As a matter of fact, I would find it so amusing if all weekend all we've heard is that he's going to retire and then he ends up coming back next year just to piss everybody off who was already thinking he's gone. I wouldn't be really surprised if he retired. I mean, he's been in the league long enough. He's accomplished everything you can accomplish. He's won 7 Super Bowls. He's been to 10 Super Bowls. He owns just about every playoff record you can own for a quarterback. There are so many records that he owns that are probably never going to be broken or going to be held for a really, really long time just because of his longevity and how often he made the playoffs. So if it's true, that's when I'll go more into it because, like I've said before, I am a huge Tom Brady fan. It would suck to see him retire, actually, just because it's just weird. I mean, he's been in the league for so long, it would just be weird without Tom. But the game rolls on, man. I can live without Troy Aikman. I can definitely live without Tom Brady, too. So if whenever it's announced whether he's coming back or not, that's when we'll get more into it. But I'm not going to be writing him off yet because he hasn't announced it. And until Tom Brady himself announces it, I can't really believe it until it actually happens. But, you know, a lot of major sources are reporting it, so it sounds like it's going to happen. It's just somehow it got out before it was supposed to be announced, I guess. All right, and now let's move on to the top 10 NBA power rankings. There's a few shakeups in my power rankings this week, except at the top, of course. Number one, still the Phoenix Suns, because they're on a 10-game winning streak right now. They're 40-9 overall. I mean, when you're on a 10-game winning streak and you were already the best team in the league, how can I remove you from number one? Can't do that. So they're still at number one, balling uncontrollably. Number two, I still got the Golden State Warriors at 37-13. They're on a 5-game winning streak, 7-3 in their last 10 games. I was amused that there was a few articles this week talking about a Steph Curry slump. It's like, y'all get real upset over somebody not shooting well every single night. I mean, come on, he's Steph Curry. He's going to have a bad night here and there. But Warriors still playing well, still playing great. And Klay Thompson's getting better with every game as well. He's still playing light minutes, but I mean, come on, he's coming off of 2 really major injuries, but he's still looking good when he gets his time on the floor. Number three, Memphis Grizzlies, 35-17. They bounced back a couple weeks ago. They had a kind of shitty week, but this week they bounced right back. They're on a 3-game winning streak, 7-3 over the last 10 games. Ja Morant, the dude just gets better with every single game, and their defense is just something else. And this team's playing great, so. They are number three. Moving on up in my power rankings, is the Philadelphia 76ers. I've got them at number four. Joel Embiid, this dude continues to ball hard too. I don't like to talk about MVP this early in the season because we're not even halfway done, but he looks to be the front runner, or at least he should be discussed as one of the front runners, especially at this point in time. Also, I mean, right now they are third in the East. But right now they're playing so well that I can tell that they're going to be moving on up real quick soon. I mean, they're not that far behind the Heat at this point anyways. They're only like two games behind, I think, or a game and a half behind the Heat, and who are in first place in the East. But the 76ers, the only problem still, Ben Simmons. Are we getting rid of this dude? Are we keeping him? I think you're holding your team back by continuing to keep this dude on the team who isn't playing. And he doesn't want to play there. And we just need to stop with this whole, oh, he has mental health issues, because it's so annoying that, like, that's an excuse. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to diminish mental health issues. I actually understand that's a real thing. But it's so annoying how in sports these days, that's the excuse they use now for everything. And it's because you can't really say, oh, come on, because if you question it, then you look like the asshole. Well, guess what? I don't care if I look like the asshole. I'm going to question it. And I haven't believed his bullshit mental health issues thing from the start. Hasn't wanted to be with the 76ers since the end of last season. He got his little feelings hurt because Doc Rivers said, I don't know what's going on with him. And nobody knows what's going on with him. So what the fuck was Doc Rivers supposed to say? So get rid of Ben Simmons. Get rid of him. I don't know why you're holding on to him. He's not better trade bait just sitting on the bench. Just get rid of him. Get whatever you can get. Because at this point in the season, the Sixers are playing great. Maybe you can get some halfway decent player out of this who can help you, I don't know, win the East. I don't know, make the NBA Finals. You're that good of a team. And Joel Embiid, you don't want to waste this season. He's playing at a high level, and he's the type of dude who gets injured a lot, too. And so you really want to take advantage of the way he's playing right now. And if you want to win a championship, you're going to need to move Ben Simmons. It's too much of a drain on the entire season with his mental health issues. Number five on my top 10 are the Miami Heat. They're 32-18. The only reason why I put them behind the Sixers is just because they don't play as grimy as the Sixers do. I mean, the Sixers are just flying high right now, in my opinion. The Heat are playing great too, but I just think the Sixers are a better team. The Heat are more of a finesse team to me, whereas the Sixers play a lot better defense. And Joel Embiid, when that dude's playing great, like if he's playing like this during the playoffs, I'm going to be very intrigued to see an amazing matchup between him and Giannis Antetokounmpo, because I think Giannis will have met his match if Joel Embiid is playing like this in the playoffs. And then at number six, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I've got the Cleveland Cavaliers at number six, and I had to put them at number six. Right now they're 30-20, but they have gone 8-2 in the last 10 games. This team is on a tear, and it's just crazy because, you know, they're the no-name squad for the most part. I mean, Kevin Love's on the team, and they traded for Rajon Rondo a few weeks ago from the Lakers, but it's just crazy the way this team's playing. They're a scrappy team, and they're playing great right now. We'll see if they're able to keep it up for the entire season, but right now they have moved on up in my power rankings. Moving on to number seven in my top 10, another team I haven't actually had in my power rankings at all yet this season is the Denver Nuggets. They're 28-21. They're on a five-game winning streak, 8-2 in their last 10 games. And they're just playing some great basketball right now. And they're out in the Western Conference. I don't think a lot of people are thinking about them. Jokic, he's having another spectacular MVP season as well. So I got the Nuggets at number seven. Number eight, I've still got the Mavericks in there. They're 29-22. The 7-3 in their last 10 games. They kind of had a quiet week this week, although Luka had an amazing game the other night. He seems to be getting healthy again and finding his stride with his shot. Porzingis was hurt again, though. So, and like I said, they don't have a lot of stars around Luka, and I don't know if they're going to do anything at the trade deadline. I think that if they have a shot at adding somebody halfway decent at the trade deadline, they should. But right now I've got the Mavericks at number 8. They're still playing some great defense too. Number 9 in my top 10 are the Milwaukee Bucks. They've dropped about halfway down my list from last week. They haven't had a good week overall. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games. 31-21, still doing well in the Eastern Conference. But they had a pretty shitty week, so that's why they dropped in my rankings. And then the biggest tumble in my power rankings, and they keep falling further and further down each and every week, and I wouldn't be shocked if next week, depending on what happens, they fall completely out, and that's the Chicago Bulls at 31-18. They've been 4-6 in their last 10 games, and they haven't been playing that great. So I know the injuries have taken a toll on them, so I could chalk it up to that. But also, I didn't know if I really believed in them yet. And so we'll see if they're able to overcome and get past this losing streak they've got going. But they haven't played real well these last couple of weeks, and they keep tumbling in my power rankings. But they were good enough to get to number 10 because I went back and forth between them and the Nets. And the Nets had a horrible week this week, too. Also injured. Everybody was injured. So injuries are actually piling up in the NBA this year. It's pretty crazy, but it is one of those years. And then moving over to the top 10 in college basketball this week, actually a few shakeups. The top two is the same with Auburn at number 1. They're 20-1. Gonzaga at 17-2. Both teams going strong. But then this week, the UCLA Bruins moved all the way up to number 3. They're 16-2. They moved up 4 spots from last week, and they're playing some great basketball. They've always been a really good basketball team. It's just during the tournament, sometimes they tend to choke. This is a really, really good team this year. They've got a solid squad. I really wouldn't be surprised if they actually ended up going to the national championship, but that's a long way from here. But they are a solid team that's played together for a couple seasons too. That's another reason why I like them a lot. When you've got a team, when you've got a core that's been together for a few years, that means they trust in each other. They've got chemistry, and it's showing with UCLA. Then Purdue moved up a couple spots to the number 4 spot. They're 18-3. Kentucky had the biggest jump this week. They jumped up 7 spots to the number 5 spot. They're 17-4. They're on a run right now, and you don't want Kentucky to get hot, especially right now when the tournament comes around. That's always a scary team when it comes tournament time. Houston's number 6 at 18-2. Arizona tumbled down to number 7. They dropped 4 spots. Baylor, another team that dropped, they are at number 8 this week, and they dropped 4 spots. They're 18-3. Fuck you, Baylor. Hate you. Number 9, Duke, staying steady at the number 9 spot, 17-3. And then rounding out the top 10 is Kansas. They dropped 5 spots, and they're 17-3. And then my Texas Longhorns bumped back up into the top 25. They're 23 this week. They had 2 big wins last week, but Saturday night was the biggest win of all. They beat Tennessee, 18th-ranked squad. And they actually dominated them for the majority of the game, except for, like, the last, like, 2 minutes. All of a sudden, Tennessee makes a huge run, and shit's tied up. But the Longhorns were able to hold on and get the win. So they moved back up to 23. So hell yeah. Hook 'em horns. All right, and then so today, since Ben Roethlisberger retired last week, I did mention he was one of my favorite football players to watch since he came into the league. And one of the reasons why I liked him a lot is that the way he played football reminded me a lot of two of my favorite quarterbacks growing up, Troy Aikman and John Elway. He had Troy Aikman's pocket presence and awareness and knew how to read a defense. And then he had John Elway's grittiness, where he could just take off and run, and he was able to just stand in the pocket and just take huge hits, or he was just so big. And he also had a cannon of an arm. So those are just some of the reasons why I liked him. And since he retired last week, I decided I'm going to do a top 5 Ben Roethlisberger moments. When I actually rewatched a whole bunch of his highlights this past weekend. It was just as fun as it was when I went and did the Kobe Bryant top five last week. So let's start off with the honorable mentions. The honorable mentions were, the first one was from 2014. And what I really dug about these two games, because there's two games, week 8 and week 9, he threw for 6 touchdowns in both games. The first one was week 8. It was the Steelers versus the Colts. They kicked the crap out of the Colts, 51-34. And Ben Roethlisberger's stat line was he was 40 for 49, 522 yards and 6 touchdowns. Then week 9, it was Steelers versus Ravens. They kicked the shit out of the Ravens, 43-23, which, if you don't know, that's pretty rare when either one of those teams kicks the shit out of the other team, because it's usually a close-ass matchup between those two. But Ben's stat line was 25 for 37, 340 yards and 6 touchdowns. And just what I really liked about that is this was after the Super Bowl years for him. And a lot of people like to hold against Ben Roethlisberger that he had good teams surrounding him. But like I said the other day, every great player has great teams surrounding him. Every great player has great coaches along the way. Every great player has other teammates surrounding them that do help them win their championships. So to sit here and say, oh, he had great defenses, which he did. But hey, so did Tom Brady at the beginning of his career. It's stupid to hold shit like that against him. And I really think that, especially during this time period, was some of the best football that Ben Roethlisberger played, just hands down by himself. He, like I said, he had a cannon of an arm, and he just made some insane plays. And especially if you watch these highlights that I watched, I'm like, damn, man, Big Ben was a bad man. It's just he came up in the time with Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Eli Manning and Phillip Rivers and Drew Brees. And so there was a whole bunch of Aaron Rodgers. You know, there's a whole bunch of other quarterbacks going on. But, I mean, he should still get his respect. And that was what I liked about those two games, just because he balled out. 6 touchdowns, 2 consecutive games. That's crazy. And he did it back in 2014. Then my second honorable mention is anytime the Steelers played the Baltimore Ravens. One of the greatest rivalries in the NFL is the Pittsburgh Steelers versus the Baltimore Ravens. You always know you're getting a great game out of these two. And I tried trying to pick any one of them. And there's just so many times where, like, the Steelers were down and Big Ben would have a great comeback against them. Or, you know, the one that I just mentioned where he had 6 touchdowns. Then there was the other one where, like, the Steelers were down, and I remember he threw a touchdown pass, and right as he's throwing the touchdown pass, one of the defenders hits him in the nose and fucking cracks his nose, and dude's walking off with his blood coming out of his nose, and they're shoving tampons in his nose on the side of on the sideline, and then he has to come back out, and they actually ended up winning the game. But that's what I mean. And, like, they did have a lot of other games too that were like where one team would win like 9-6. They just always had amazing battles, and it was really difficult to even try and select one of those matchups. So I just said anytime they played each other, because, you know, the Ben Roethlisberger years and then the Ray Lewis years with the Ravens, it's like they just had some insane matchups, and they were great to even watch this year. And the Steelers weren't even that great of a team this year, but they played some great games against the Ravens. And then the last honorable mention I have is from a couple years ago. The Steelers were in Detroit playing the Detroit Lions, and Ben Roethlisberger drops back the pass and throws a 97-yard pass to Juju Smith-Schuster. And just what I liked about that play in particular is it just displayed his arm talent. And don't get me wrong, Juju, if you go and watch the play, you'll see Juju made his own plays too, and he was a big part of the play, obviously. But it was a cannon shot, and it's not the first time he's done something like that. He's had some really, actually a couple plays about that far. But that one really stuck out to me. Yeah, it was just against the Lions, but it was still an awesome play. I mean, 97-yard pass, come the fuck on, that's dope. So now let's go into the top five, starting with number 5, was October 31st, 2004. This was Ben Roethlisberger's rookie season. He had just taken over He had played, I think, a couple games before this one, but they were playing the New England Patriots at this point in time. Okay, so this is one of the dynasties of the Patriots. This is when they had a crazy defense. This is when Tom Brady's just catching his stride. And they had a 21-game winning streak coming into this game. And the Steelers absolutely dominated them and actually won 34-20. And a big reason why they won is because, you know, Ben was poised. And you even hear it in the Man in the Arena documentary about Tom Brady that's on ESPN+. Amazing documentary, by the way. But even he says, I remember watching this game and I was like, who the hell is this Roethlisberger dude? And he came out and he ended the Patriots' 21-game winning streak in his rookie season. And like I said, don't get me wrong, I remember his rookie season. He did have a good team, but guess what? That team was able to stop the Patriots' 21-game winning streak. And that was a big deal, especially at that time. Number four, top five Ben Roethlisberger moment. Was the 2005 AFC Championship game versus the Denver Broncos. Steelers had to go into Denver. His stat line was 21 of 29, 275 yards, three touchdowns. One was a rushing touchdown. And they absolutely obliterated this Denver Broncos team 34-17. It wasn't close at all. I think at one point in the game, it was like 21-0, 24-0, something like that. But one of my favorite plays, and what I really dug about it, because this was his second year in the league, and you could tell that he was really starting to find his voice with the offense. Like, he was really starting to open up. He was no longer the rookie anymore. He's got to be the leader of this team. And I just remember that this game in particular, I would say, was like his coming out party. Actually, probably the game before, which is in this top five, so I'm not going to showbiz myself. But this game in particular, it really was all about him. He really was like the main reason why they won this game. And like I said, it was like his coming out party for this in the league. And this Broncos team was no joke either. They were a really damn good team. I can't remember if they were the number one or the number two seed, but they were one of the top seeds. I mean, so it was a good Broncos team that they won. And if you'll remember her too, one of my favorite parts of it is on one of the touchdown plays, he pulls out like his two fingers like he's shooting a gun, and it's just funny because he doesn't usually celebrate that much, but since when you have a great game like that, you can be on some like that. And it was you could tell he was having fun, because I mean, when you're kicking the shit out of a team like that, especially in the playoffs, and a chance to go to the Super Bowl, yeah. And so then that leads me into the number three top five Ben Roethlisberger moment, which actually is the Super Bowl that they ended up going into the next season, or that after that Broncos game, Super Bowl 40 versus the Seattle Seahawks. What was really cool about this season, actually, and I really do remember this season vividly for some reason. I just think it's because it was a really good season, in my opinion. But the Steelers actually weren't that good. I believe they were 6-6 going into week 12, and then ended up just winning every game after that. Nobody expected them to do anything. They ended up getting either the last seed or the second to last seed in the playoffs. They had to go on the road for each and every game. They had to face a bunch of really good teams along the way. And if you don't remember, the Seattle Seahawks team had Sean Alexander, the running back. I'm almost positive he won the MVP that year. If he didn't win it that year, he won it the year before. But regardless, he was in the prime of his career. And just nobody believed in the Steelers at this point in time. And especially because it was Roethlisberger's second year. So what's there to really believe in him? And he had a great rookie season, but you really can't tell in somebody's second season what they're going to be like in the future. Nobody could have predicted he was going to be a Hall of Famer like he is now. Super Bowl 40 versus Seattle, they basically had the lead the entire time. They won 21-10. But there were a couple plays that most specifically Ben had in this game. Now, this was not his greatest game. He was more just holding it together, but he did have some big plays. One of the big plays that I really dug was a 3rd and 28. He's just running around, scrambling, And you could tell, and he looks at the sideline as he's running, and then he knows, I got to stop here. Here's the line of scrimmage. He stops, he looks, he pumps, and he just throws a bomb to Hines Ward for a first down, sets them up in great field position for them to score a touchdown. Then another play that I like is for a running play that he got a touchdown on. I remember it was questionable at the time, but they replayed it, and it was a touchdown, so there you go. But that was my third favorite Ben Roethlisberger moment. Number two on my top five Ben Roethlisberger moments is the 2005 AFC divisional game against the Indianapolis Colts. Now, this had Peyton Manning at quarterback. This team had Peyton Manning at quarterback. This was a very good team, by the way. If you don't remember when Peyton Manning was in the league, yeah, he was one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He used to light everybody up. But for some reason, this was just a very low-scoring game, which isn't shocking because the Pittsburgh Steelers are known for defense, and they're just an overall good team. Now, if you don't remember, this 2005 season was also Jerome Bettis' last season, the running back for the Steelers. And that's basically, this run was for him. They wanted him to go out with a Super Bowl win, which he did. But this game in particular, I think, is Ben Roethlisberger's second greatest play. And I'm not the only one who thinks it, because basically on every list that had Ben Roethlisberger's top moments on it, this was number two. And number one is also matches up with it, because they are amazing moments. So Steelers up 21-18. They're just absolutely owning the Colts. You know, I believe it's like the 5-yard line, 3-yard line. They're really close. They're really close to scoring a touchdown. And you're just thinking to yourself, because you know Jerome Bettis. What Jerome Bettis was known for was, if you got a goal line stand, all you got to do is hand it off to the bus, because he's so motherfucking big that he's going to get you whatever you want. And he was a great running back even besides that. I actually really loved Jerome Bettis as a running back. Great running back. I enjoyed the fuck out of that dude's career. And there's nobody like him either, but this is a Ben Roethlisberger list. So we're not talking about you, Bettis, but we are talking about you in this play. Because, like I said, Jerome was known for, you got a goal line stand, hand it off to him, he's going to just walk right in. Well, everybody knew that was coming. So what happens? Ben Roethlisberger hikes the ball, turns around, hands it off to Jerome Bettis, and oh my God, boom, he gets hit. Helmet hits the ball. Ball goes flying up in the air, and you're just like, holy shit. And there's only like a minute. 16, minute 15, something like that left on the clock. And Jerome Bettis never, ever, 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 ever fumbles at the goal line. He does fumble on occasions, but it's never at the goal line. And just the way the defender hit it, it just like pops into the air. And then it's rolling on the ground. And cornerback Nick Harper picks it up, and he's running. And I'm just like, oh my God, oh my God. And I remember watching this in real time. I'm like, oh shit, this sucks. Oh my God, there's Ben. Oh my God, there's Ben. And Ben Roethlisberger is literally the only guy Nick Harper has to beat. If Nick Harper's able to beat Ben Roethlisberger, he's running it in for a touchdown. Well, guess what? Big Ben is like, not today, motherfucker. He's able to just barely grab his foot, trips up Nick Harper. He falls to the ground at about the Steelers' 40-ish yard line. The Colts' offense was stagnant all day, and it was stagnant up until that point. Still, even on that drive, they were able to get into decent field goal range, but I wouldn't say it was an automatic one. And I remember just sitting there watching it, and they had Vanderjack this year, and he actually was one of the best kickers in the league that year. But hey, man, the way this game was going, it was crazy. It was fucked up. And the Colts ended up missing that field goal. And that was all because Ben Roethlisberger was back there, and he was able to grab Nick Harper's foot, trip him up, and the Steelers would end up going on to the Super Bowl that year and winning it all for Jerome Bettis, and he was able to retire a Super Bowl champion. Now, speaking of Super Bowls, we're going to get to the number one top five Ben Roethlisberger moment. And that is from Super Bowl 43 versus the Arizona Cardinals. Now, going into this game, the Cardinals were not a good team. They basically backed into the playoffs. They were a 9-7 team, but they did that shit. That happens all the time in the postseason, where if you just get going and you're able to win, It doesn't matter what the hell your record was coming in. If you win, you win. And they ended up winning. They ended up getting to the Super Bowl. Now, this was one of my favorite Super Bowls of all time. It had literally basically everything in it. You had the Steelers came out for a strong lead. And all of a sudden, though, the Cardinals, right before halftime, they start a drive. They're driving down the field, driving down the field. It's looking like Kurt Warner. He's going to do his thing. He's going to just throw a touchdown. They're at, I believe, like the 2-yard line. Kurt Warner drops back to pass, and you're thinking to yourself, oh my God, they're gonna score. No, there's big old James Harrison, intercepts the ball, runs it all the way back for a touchdown. So that's how we go into halftime. And you would think the Cardinals would be pretty dejected, but they weren't. They ended up making a pretty solid comeback, and with about a little over 2 minutes on the clock, they drove down the field. And Kurt Warner made this amazing pass to Larry Fitzgerald. Now I'll never forget watching it. I just remember this is classic Larry Fitzgerald, like classic Larry Fitzgerald play. Kurt Warner just finds him in the seam and he boop runs and you can't catch him. And he runs and gets a touchdown and there's 2:37 left. And the Steelers got to drive 88 yards to get this win. So Ben Roethlisberger engineers the greatest comeback of his entire career. He has, like I said before, the second most comeback drives in the entire NFL, and this is one of them. And this is number one. This is the greatest drive he ever had in his life because it was for the Super Bowl. Not only that, too, it was just amazing drive. I mean, the way they put it together was awesome. They had, like I said, 2:37 on the clock, 88 yards. He had this beautiful pump fake. That's what Ben Roethlisberger was known for, if you do not know. It was his beautiful pump fake. He was able to connect with Santonio Holmes on a huge, like, 40-yard bomb down the field. Then they get set up into, they're definitely in field goal range, but they need a touchdown. And there's about, I believe, 43 seconds on the clock. Ben Roethlisberger takes the snap, drops back, looking, and he just tosses it into the corner of the end zone. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Because Santonio Holmes is there. And if you don't remember, Santonio Holmes was an excellent receiver, great hands, great toe drag swag. And Ben Roethlisberger makes one of the most amazing passes, and Santonio Holmes makes one of the most amazing catches to win the Super Bowl. And all there was 35 seconds left on the clock. Kick it off to the Cardinals. They were unable to get down the field to score, and Steelers would go on to win that Super Bowl. But that is Ben Roethlisberger's number one moment. That's one of his greatest plays ever. That's his greatest drive ever. That's my top five Ben Roethlisberger moments. I just wanted to give him a shout out just because I really did enjoy his career, enjoyed it from start to finish. It was a spectacular career, definitely Hall of Fame worthy, first ballot Hall of Famer. And hey, if Tom Brady retires, that's going to be the both of them going into the Hall of Fame at the same time. So, that will be an excellent, excellent Hall of Fame if that's what really happens. But regardless, Ben Roethlisberger had an amazing career, stayed with one team the whole time, had many, many different great receivers surrounding him, had great defensive players, had a couple good coaches, had a solid offensive line. He had a great relationship with his center who retired last year, Mike Pouncey. You could tell how close they were. They were both like crying last year together when it was Mike Pouncey's last game. So you could tell how close he was with his offensive line, especially Mike Pouncey in particular. But I really enjoyed his career. It was an amazing career. I really thank him for the memories because I love sports and especially football. And he put it all out there on the field. And he really was a cross between Troy Aikman and John Elway. He was that way all the way to the end. He actually, really, his last couple of seasons were marred just because of the elbow injury. When you have an elbow injury or a shoulder injury on your throwing shoulder, that it's usually very difficult to come back from, especially at his age. And just the way he played the game. I mean, nobody could bring him down. That was another thing that I would see in the highlights that I was watching over the weekend, is that there were so many times where he would have like four defenders who weigh like 300 pounds a piece just hanging from him, and he'd be able to like get away from them or pass the ball. So he just had many, many great qualities as a quarterback that I really personally liked, and I personally enjoyed his career. And I'm looking forward to watching him be inducted into the Hall of Fame 5 years from now. That's today's show. Let's see what we'll be talking about Friday, since there won't be any football. But believe me, I'm sure plenty is going to be happening this week. We'll be talking about Super Bowl 56, man. The Super Bowl that nobody could have predicted. Rams versus Bengals. So I'll talk to you guys on Friday. Peace.